You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
Let's look at the punt counter here.
He's broken my heart enough. I wasn't all in on him winning.
My experiences playing with each of you are vastly different.
But at the same time, you can't stack them with garbage.
When Hurley gets the juices flowing.
If you don't leave your comfort zone, you will never hear something or learn something that challenges you.
One of the most unique experiences I've had playing Magic in years.
I felt a little bit of vindication.
Oh, you brave soul, logging in for another episode of Tryhards. This week, we try to get modern. It's difficult as old men, but we'll do the best we can. New? That's anathema to us, but we'll kick it around anyway. Who gets official? What is gone? And what may have more room to grow than ever before? It's all on this week's episode of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. Let's get it started, guys. What are we drinking this week? Matt, what do you got in the glass?
Well, you guys were joking about scotch. I have some scotch. And not because of that, but because I want some scotch.
What a great lead-in that was.
I know. They had some of my favorite 12-year scotch on sale. You know, the girlfriend was nice enough to give me a bottle earlier in the week. Been kind of like, it's one of those long, stressful, boring days, if that makes sense.
Brian, what do you have in the glass?
I felt a little case of the malaria coming on, so I'm fighting it vehemently with some quinine in the form of a gin and tonic. I think I'm going to win because of the sheer volume of quinine in my system.
That's an excellent choice. What I have in the glass pales in comparison to the treat that I picked up for myself this afternoon. What I have in the glass is the Standby Founders All Day IPA. But Brian, you know this. I got a hankering for something that I could only get at one outlet here in Quincy, and that is some Old Vienna Red Hot Ripplets. I downed an entire bag, and I'm not talking about like the grab bag. So I'm going to be paying the price for that probably later tonight with some acid reflux.
Yes, and you will.
Then tomorrow when I'm tasting them again on the back end. But they were amazing. If you like spicy chips, you ever see the Old Vienna Red Hot Ripplets with St. Louis hot sauce? That's what you get. They're my treat for myself today. Guys, what magic did you get to play this week? Brian, I know you had a busy week. Did you make room for cardboard?
No, I made room for cardboard with myself and the computer. Pretty much limited to the beta testing. And that's fine because with somebody whose schedule is as crazy as mine is at the current moment, it's hard to kind of get out and play. Nobody I knew in the area even was playing that much this week. You know, work schedules were nuts and all kinds of things. So I was kind of happy to just do that.
Yeah, I had a busy work schedule as well. And then a family visitation and funeral took me away from some of my open time this weekend. It was great to see people even under those dire circumstances, but it took me away from Magic. Matt, I know you were on the road and got to swing into Indy this weekend. Was it a chaos scene over the unbanning of Bloodbraid Elf and Jace? Or was everybody holding on to their dignity?
You know, it wasn't as bad as everyone thought it would be. We did go up there. I did just end up playing in 5 drafts, including a turbo draft at the end of the day, which is just you draft, play one match, and then the winner gets 100 tickets. For some reason, I just cannot win in this format. I did win my turbo draft, but I drafted what I thought were good decks, and my decks just decided to all over me. It was a blast. They brought back their $10 drafts. I don't know if you guys remember last year they didn't have those.
Yeah, that's right. I do remember that.
Which is just the best thing ever. You know, they're still making money hand over fist on those. And then I also got to play some Legacy on MTGO. So got some great punts in that day. Let's look at the punt counter here. It's 4 punts. Missequencing my, my plays.
Well, Matt, if you're missequencing plays, what deck are you trying to shake the rust off on?
I played the mono green 12 post deck that I'm going to be playing. Shoot, what is that, in 2 weeks, 3 weeks in St. Louis? Coming up quick.
It's sooner than we think.
I haven't assembled it in paper yet. I took a big step towards actually assembling it in paper. I got to give a big shout out to Jose. He's let me borrow some big cards. It was great chatting with him. Got to meet him. apparently I called him the wrong name at one point on cast, so I apologize in public about that. It was great talking to him, and I found out that he knows quite a few people in the community as well, and everyone had nothing but great things to say about him. So thank you very much. I picked up a last few pieces for that over the weekend.
Having people who are part of your active community is always so much fun. And for someone like Jose, who has been there with us on a lot of our hangouts, to take that chance and trust Matt, which, Jose, are you okay with him trading those away if he thinks it's a good deal? All right. Maybe you might want to rethink that, but you'll probably get him back. Get them back. Jose, thank you so much. It'll be a great time that Matt will have because of you coming up at that Legacy event in St. Louis. Guys, we got a new Patreon subscriber this week. Thanks to Jason Thornberry, a new $5 Patreon member. Jason, you'll be in the raffles coming up next month. You want to check it out, patreon.com/tryhards. There is a level for you. Anything from a dollar up to whatever number you can imagine. It's all there for you. Check it out. Do what you want to do. We love your support here, and we try to give back as much as we can through our raffles and our time and our hangouts and at patreon.com/tryhard. So, Jason, you'll be in this coming up next month. It's time for this month's second raffle brought to you this week by Tryhard Matt Hurley. Foil Spider Silk Armor. Brian and I both thought that this was a fake card before the podcast started tonight, but Matt assures us that this is worth something like $8 in Pauper.
The normal one's worth like $1.50 or something like that for a common out of Mercadian Mask. Sideboard card to combat electricity. The art on it's very unique. It's got that unique Mercadian Mask art, and the foil looks just fantastic.
That'll be amazing. Here we go. Matt, how many eligibles do we have this week?
53.
53. Woo. Let me update the Tryhards official randomizer. This is different than the official WotC campaign app. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. 47. 47.
Vincent Yee. I think he's won once or twice.
Yes, he has.
Vincent, congratulations. You're picking up a foil spider silk armor courtesy of Matt Hurley this week here on Tryhards. Guys, that brings us up to this week's tournaments. GP Lyon gets us started. It's the event this weekend that Matt didn't go to, so I figure that's probably the best reason to start there. 2058 showed up to play Modern. Gregors Kowalski knocked off Marcio Carvalho, i.e. Brian's ex. 2-1. Kowalski was on red-green Eldrazi. Carvalho was on Abzan, the deck that I would have been much more likely to play. All right, yeah. Brian, you had a vested interest, even if it was just with a heavy heart, in this final. And I know that you're a guy who likes Abzan strategies. You like your red-blue Delver in faster formats like Legacy, but you also like your grindy formats. Were you all in on Abzan, or you've championed Eldrazi? Did you think that red-green Eldrazi, as new as it is to the format, was actually going to take this down?
No, I absolutely thought Carvalho had it. I mean, his play is so tight. Abzan, as Reed Duke showed on the Pro Tour with Abzan, as Jadeen Complarence was showing in Indy with Abzan, that has got some real, real game against the metagame right now. And so I really thought this was just going to be a kind of Abzan second, third, fourth, you name it, coming out party. Carvalho just could not get there. It's not for lack of trying. He had some great, great draws and some great hands. In the end, it's really hard to fight against double Reality Smasher and the Eldrazi Obligators that have haste and things of that nature. So, yeah, hats off to Gregors. And I was a little bummed that Carvalho couldn't get there, but he's broken my heart enough. I wasn't all in on him winning. I have to say, it kind of hurt when he had to extend the hand because he really did look a little devastated. He's trying to get back on the horse after a not-so-stellar, phenomenal year, I guess, last year, as he's had in the past. And, you know, he's still one of the best players in the world, so what are we talking about? But I think by his standards, he would agree with me.
The emotional impact of Brian's Dear John letter to Marcio Carvalho still resonating, of course, with impact. Matt, we had the red-green Eldrazi, Abzan, Jeskai Control, and Tron as the top eight. Day one, undefeated decks, we saw Blue-White Control, Grixis Shadow, Abzan, that was in the hands of Marcio Carvalho, Titan Breach, Jeskai Breach, Lantern, Mono-Green Tron, Burn, and Mardu Pyromancer. all of those archetypes had at least one undefeated deck in day one through eight rounds of Modern. Has Modern opened up so much so that it's about to be closed down with the recent unbannings of Bloodbraid Elf and Jace? Or is this just a format responding to the recent dominance of Lantern?
Just a wide open format. And we've said this 100 times. I've been watching quite a bit of streaming, and I don't think that Jace and Bloodbraid Elf are going to have nearly the impact that people expect. Everybody I see playing loves playing Jace, but it's never the card that they want. Weird to say that. A lot of people think that Bloodbraid is going to have more of an impact. I do think that it's going to close the format just a little bit, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Seeing all those decks, great. You know, I personally don't really want to go into a competitive play in a large competitive tournament where I basically, you know, have to dodge, say, 15 or 20% of the field just because there's no way you can prepare for it, not because you don't have a bad matchup. And I don't think any of those decks have a really favorable matchup against the entire field either. So if they didn't do these unbans, you would see a lot of rotating decks like this for a long time coming. With the unbannings, I do think you'll still see a lot of these rotating, but there's going to be the pendulum's going to swing towards Bloodbraid and Jace, at least in the short term, until people figure out where they want to be on it.
Following up on that, Modern GP was SCG Indy, who had their Modern Open as the focus. 1,060 turned out to compete. Brendan DeCandio on Grixis Shadow ultimately took down James Mangus on Eldrazitron 2-1. The top eight featured Benjamin Nikolic on Jeskai Control, Steven Dykeman on Death and Taxes, Dylan Donegan on Grixis Death Shadow. The one question that I have, Brian, has the format now passed the Humans deck and Lantern, even without Bloodbraid Elf and Jace being introduced simply as a reaction to what happened to the Pro Tour?
That's a really good question. There's some decks that just did not show up this weekend in both GP Lyon and in Indy that I was expecting to see more of. I was expecting to see more of Mardu Pyromancer. I was expecting to see more Humans decks. I was expecting to see maybe more Eldrazitron. And there was an Eldrazitron, obviously, second place, but not a ton. Second and sixth, I guess, but not a ton after that. Tron was everywhere in the metagame overall, and that was the one thing that I saw that was more, it was more green, it was green-black, but it wasn't like the Eldrazitron thing. I'm curious as to why this happened. Are people just kind of in waited out mode and then have a brew in their back pocket, and they're going to pull that out next week at the, you know, Modern tournaments and things of that nature? So, yeah, I was a little surprised about that. Lantern, I have no problem with that not showing up on camera. It was really, really good. A lot better for watching to not see Lantern on camera. The Humans deck, though, that's got a lot of play to it. So, yeah, I was a little surprised. Hurley, were you surprised not to see Humans in this tournament nearly as much as we saw on the Pro Tour?
Walking around, I did see a lot of Humans in the crowd. I was a little surprised not to see it. I don't think there's necessarily a financial barrier there. I mean, your Cavern of Souls are a little bit pricey. I think it's more so that a lot of people just took whatever they knew instead of trying to learn a new deck. I think this Humans deck is only what, Brian, like maybe 2 months old, something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I would 2 to 3 months old, I'd say. Yeah, you're right.
And I do think that a lot of people were waiting for it to prove itself. Once that happened, they'll say, okay, you know what, I'll pick up Humans, you know, I'll play some FNMs, and I'll maybe a month in, you know, they're playing at larger tournaments. The issue is now the format's going to be completely changed, and I don't think people wanted to go with any new decks. I got to say, with SCG Indy, we did see one of the locals in Quincy on camera round one, Devin Beeston. He was playing Mardu Pyromancer. I did just briefly get to talk to him. Fortunately, I missed a lot of the guys just because I was busy drafting all day and they were playing in the main event. I have to give a shout out to our one of our locals, Spencer Zimmerman. He actually took 63rd, I believe it was. So that was his highest placing. He was actually 7-2 to day two. Oh, I'm sorry. He took 47th. Tournament looked like a lot of people are having fun. I did get to see some people playing side games with Jace decks, with Bloodbraid Elf decks, and the more I see it played, the more it supports my theory that I don't think it's going to have the devastating impact that people are really worried about.
So my question to you then, Matt, how much value did you get by trading your Mind Sculptors this weekend?
I actually didn't have a chance to trade my Mind Sculptors. They were buying them, I think, for 100 or 110. There was a lot of trades going on. I think people were very kind of hesitant to do anything. SCG team event is coming up in about a month or so. You know, if I'm going to have my stuff, I'm going to go ahead and take it there and do all the trades and everything there, because I don't think they're going to drop in value before then.
You mentioned my man, Devin Beeston. I'm going to say this. One of the better players at the shop in our community. His dad is one of the fantastic people that you'll get to know. Supports his son. Devin's not only a Magic player, but a fantastic collegiate wrestler as well. And we've talked about him hit and miss before. He's really one of the up-and-coming talents. The rise of Q-Town Magic. He's not the best, but he's one of the better players at the shop. So good to see him faring well on camera. He usually favors blue decks, but he also loves collected company. So I was a little bit surprised to see him on Mardu Pyromancer in that feature, but it was a lot of fun to watch him. In the Modern Classic, it was 140, I believe. There was some numbering issues on the standings on the website. Greg Williams on Red White Prison knocked off Robert Meadows on Rug Midrange. Rug Midrange, you're saying? Yeah, good creatures, good spells, and welcome back Huntmaster of the Fells. Still a good card. I was glad that somebody dusted it off of Rug Binder Rares for the weekend.
Yes, right.
And took it for a second place finish in the Modern Classic. In Standard, Todd Stevens loosened his tie enough to play Standard after it started Modern over the weekend. Blue Black Control knocked off Paul Green on Black White Tokens. Brian, I know that you had a dog in this race. Did you think that black-white tokens could be a thing in Standard? You love the token strategies.
Yeah, no, I really do like the token strategies. And yes, this is a real deck in Standard. It gets out early, and it just keeps building resources, and it's really, really hard to keep it down because cards even like Settle the Wreckage can take it out, but it's just going to rebuild after that. I really, really like the black-white tokens in Standard. I think that's a deck we got to keep our eye on moving forward.
Brian, are you a monument or no monument player? The white monument lets you make the extra drop with the 1/1, but it costs 3.
No monument. No, I think that's a little too slow. I think the tokens deck wants to get down early and then just start pressuring. Not taking a turn off to get the monument down. I can see the ideas there. I can see the philosophy that would be a really, really good play. But I think the constant pressure that the tokens deck in this Standard metagame, it's just too strong to go with the monument route.
I saw a lot of Standard being played as well on some side events and stuff. There was a whole lot of token strategies. I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing at this time that the Rampaging Ferocidon was banned. I got to be honest, I just don't know, because I saw so many token strategies. It was getting crazy. As far as tokens goes, I want to see how you weigh in on this, Brian. There was a deck that was somebody was tuning, and it was, I won't give away who it was. It was a semi-pro person tuning this to battle a Jace and Bloodbraid metagame that's coming up. I don't know if they got the list somewhere, but I took a picture of the deck because it runs 2 Ashiok Nightmare Weavers, 4 Thoughtknot Seers, 2 Ulamogs Nullifiers, 3 Wasteland Stranglers, 4 Delays, and Eldrazi Displacers, Blight Herders, and Reality Smashers.
I'm in right now.
You know,
anything with Ashiok, Wasteland Strangler, and Reality Smasher. Oh God!
I looked at this and I'm like, this is next level right here. I'm like running Delay to put that card into exile to put it into their graveyard. That's genius. To putting it on suspend, that's insanely genius. And there's going to be so many creature heavy decks with Bloodbraid Elf that in the short term, I think this is just going to run roughshod over the entire format. And I agree with you guys. I'm 100% in.
Well, and everybody knows too that without Jace, Architect of Thought, and I did appreciate on the coverage this weekend how both Leon and Indy were saying that this is the final tour of Jace, Architect of Thought, because once
I don't know. If Mardu Pyromancer continues to ascend, AOT becomes better than JTMS. Correct. He can blank everything that Pyromancer does.
No, you're absolutely right. But I think in the metagame, what's going to happen is everybody's going to be so jonesing to try out this that tokens are the one thing that AOT does better against than Mind Sculptor. And so if people forget about that and they're not going to have an answer for all these token strategies, that's going to be a pretty big coup right there.
Enter the memory adept. That's when you just zag when they think you're going to zig. We'll see how that ends up shaking out as the new modern seems to be upon us. That was the week in tournaments. There is a new logo for Magic. The new logo for Magic is the Planeswalker symbol with a 25 inside of it. Matt, have you seen the symbol and what do you think? I think it's pretty cool.
I think it's pretty cool. That's what the symbol, the set symbol is for the Masters 25, roughly. I think the only issue is that on a small scale, it makes it kind of the symbol a little cluttered.
Not everything can be as cool as a pair of sunglasses like we had in Mercadian masks. Brian, are you down with the new Planeswalker symbol logo? I think it is a great way to mark the 25th anniversary.
It's definitely a good way to mark the 25th anniversary. I think these are the things that, you know, will be in place for the year. It's not going to kind of rebrand the entire game, the entire product. Magic has its very, very go-to font with the Magic, you know, in the kind of gold with the red outline with the Gathering. I don't think that's going anywhere, but this is great to celebrate 25 years of Magic for sure.
Would it go hand in hand with a new official app for Magic? Do we need an official app for Magic? Well, WotC thinks so. They announced this week that there is a new companion app called Portal. You might have been a little bit more creative on the name for that, but we'll take what we can get. Matt, it's got a life counter. It's got a tournament facilitator aspect to it. A lot of the pocket-sized versions of what both players and TOs want.
All I got to say is, hey, welcome to the 20th century. Here's the things you need. You need local tournament or local game store locators. I've been harping on that. If I'm in another city or I'm traveling, I should be able to pop on my app quickly, say, where's the local game store? Bring that local game store's, you know, registered tournaments up and say, oh, tonight there's a draft or something like that. It should have a location for your DCI number, you know, to bring up your history. And more importantly, have your DCI number digitally loaded into your thing so that you can just scan it at tournaments or just give them the DCI number. A mobile version of Gather is another kind of have to.
Brian, you travel quite a bit, and I know that you would like this kind of information. Magic is also a worldwide game, and it's been translated into many languages. Has Wizards contacted you to do the Latin translation yet?
Oh, God, I hope so. I mean, it might be buried in some of my unopened emails. Yeah, somebody's got to get right on that, Wizard. You listening? I agree with Hurley. This is something that's long overdue. I think the guys at Top Decked that we met while we were in Pittsburgh who got the Top Decked app, that is such a great resource, and I find myself using it a lot more than I ever thought I would. It's just such a great thing to have to get pairings, to get updates on tournaments happening. And as Hurley said, this is something Magic needs to promote itself. Everybody's got apps for everything else. I mean, God knows we've had apps for finding card prices and things. What about apps for actually playing the game?
One thing we might need to do right now is pour one out for those who had passed. Brian just said, better late than never. But sometimes it's better to recognize those that we appreciate later than never. Hurley, pour out a little bit of scotch. Brian, pour out a little bit of quinine. And I'll pour out a little bit of beer for the From the Vault series. It's gone, guys. Gone. And its terrible foiling process, hopefully, will be gone with it. In its wake, we will now know the signature spellbook. And of course, Jace, Faceboy for Magic, will be the leadoff in this new product line. The new signature spellbook series will debut June 15th. For $19.99, you'll get a foil planeswalker and 8 quote-unquote signature cards for that planeswalker. Brian, do you think we're going to get a foil Jace the Mind Sculptor for $19.99 and signature cards to go with it? Or will it be an AOT or a Memory Adept or just a Jace Beleren or the Living Guild Pact?
If you want Jace, you're going to get Jace. That's I can tell you right up front. It's going to be Jace Beleren. It's not going to be as bad as Living Guild Pact, but it's not even going to be as good as Memory Adept, or God forbid, you know, giving us Vin's Prodigy or giving us Mind Sculptor. I'm kind of saying whatever replaces From the Vault, I'll give it a shot. I use that to get tons of value to sell to dealers and get some dual lands I needed to get some higher end stuff that I needed. Thanks from the vault for making my dollars worth more than they really should have been when I bought that stuff. For $20, this seems fine. A Jace, probably with new artwork and things. Sure, I'll give it a shot. Let's see what happens. How long is this going to go? And is it just going to be reprints of other Planeswalkers? Or is this going to be new Planeswalkers introduced through this signature spellbook?
Hurley, you don't even think that Jace is one of the best Planeswalkers of all time. Would you give $20 for this?
Depends on what's in it. Here's the thing, though. They've gotten away from this recently with some of the Master Series, but From the Vault always was a way to say, hey, WPN stores, here you go. Here's an exclusive product that you get that you can sell for $60 and drive traffic through your store. I don't remember what MSRP was on $80. You know, if you want to sell for more, you can sell it for more. And it was always a way to reward WPN stores. I hope that they go back to a rewarding set that these these stores can sell. So, you know, they had this disastrous arch enemy, I think it was. Nobody really liked that at all. You know, they had they had the iconic masters that they sold in big box stores, and that kind of got rid of some of the allure of the master set. So you got to reward your store somehow. I don't know how you're going to do that, but if you take away from the vault, there's going to have to be a replacement of some type.
Brian, you pointed out something that was very cool. I hadn't even thought about this before today. There is a new product coming up from Wizards this summer. It is their new version of Draft called Battle Bond. It is a two-headed giant version of Draft. And this isn't going to be necessarily tied into any standard cycle. So this is going to be an avenue for reprints from all over the Magic map. I think I'm in a unique position on this podcast. I've played Two-Headed Giant with Matt. I've played a lot of Two-Headed Giant with Brian. I don't know if you two have played together or not. And I will say, my experiences playing with each of you are vastly different. And I've enjoyed each opportunity to play that way. What do you expect from this set, Brian? And where do you see the possibility for Legacy Impact reprints?
I'm glad you asked both those questions. First of all, I have to say, let's hope that where they place Battle Bond, because it's going to be a new plane, has a decent name. Conspiracy took place on Fiora. Not terrible. Unstable took place on Bablovia. Jeepers, criminy. Okay, so
it's unstable.
Wait a minute. I've got this.
I know.
I've got this. They do a deal with Marvel. They place it on Warworld, where the Hulk is the world king.
But it's actually on a place called Kylem, a never-before-seen plane. So I'm actually excited about the name. As for legacy playable things, vintage playable things, I'm really looking forward to this. This is something I think that Wizards can do the very, very tricky job of threading the needle with some needed reprints in a set like this. It's not just, it's going to be kind of a standalone. It's not going to have a big impact card number wise with the print run and things. I think you've got a lot of opportunity to get some cards out there that have been needing a big reprint for Modern, for Legacy for quite a long time. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens with that and sitting down and playing just an absolutely fun game of Two-Headed Giant with a good friend. That's the main reason why I'm looking forward to Battle Bond.
Hurley, you're our finance guy. What do you see happening from Battle Bond?
I'll tell you what I think needs to happen, and then I'll tell you what I think is going to happen. If this becomes a yearly thing or kind of a bi-yearly thing, this would be a great place to reprint those cards that need a reprint but are super feel bads to open when you're paying $8 or $10 for a pack. So we're talking Praetors. Some of the Praetors are worth like $5 or $6. They reprint them and they go down to $2. That feels super bad to open up. You can't stack the master sets with value, but at the same time, you can't stack them with garbage. $2 to $5, even under $10 cards need reprinted. This Battle Bond would be a great place to reprint those. So you could have a fun format. You could have a GP that accompanies the release of this. So something to mix it up during the summer. We were looking at the schedule today, and if this is released in June, this would be a great time to have a GP to do this, because usually June, July are kind of slow times. Normally July, actually. The other thing is, don't have to do these two master sets a year, which, yes, they drive sales for Wizards, but I think you'll sell, you know, a lot of people said, you know, you're going to sell a lot more of $3 or $4 packs than you will of $10 packs, no matter what's really in them. June 8th is when this is going to be released, so hopefully we'll see kind of a surprise announcement of, hey, we've got some GPs, we've got some national, you know, national events going on, some regional events where you can play this Battle Bond, and it's got great reprints, a great avenue for those reprints, you know, stuff that just can't be anywhere else, and it's a blast. What I think is going to happen is I think it might be kind of released during summer, and I don't think it's going to be promoted well. People are not going to know exactly where it fits in the entire ecosystem. Wizards has always struggled with, okay, so we've got this unique product. How do we market it? They can market this properly, then this will be a slam dunk. If they don't market it properly and they don't get the word out to say, hey, bring your buddy to play, you know, Two-Headed Giant with you, that might be what happens, and that might be an issue.
I would love for this to be what happens, for enfranchised players to all bring a new player. There's no way you could dictate that. It's just being an ambassador for the game. If you're an enfranchised player, bring a new player. What a great way to showcase the game of Magic and to grow its reach. If you're interested in Magic, try growing it on that weekend. And Battle Bond seems like a great way to do just that. Guys, before we get into the elevator, I've got a surprise question for you. Since we recorded the show last week, Valentine's Day has come and gone. Matt, did your Valentine do anything for you in the Magic-related realm?
No, she did not. I think her Valentine's Day gift to me was saying, you know what? I've got Saturday off. Even though I've got Saturday off, why don't you go ahead and go to SCG Indy? So I think that was my Valentine's Day gift, to be completely honest.
We have a $5 limit for Valentine's Day in our house, because every day is Valentine's Day in our house. So oh, yeah.
Only with Sean Seacrest, though.
I was gifted a pack of Ixalan. She went out of her way to get it.
Ooh.
And my favorite treat, I literally cannot control myself around peanut M&Ms. And she knows this, so she doesn't put them in the house for the rest of the year, because she doesn't want me to be like four bills all of a sudden overnight. She waited as I opened that pack. She's like, what'd you get? Is it relevant? It was Arcane Adaptation. And I did my best to smile as that was the bear and be like, that was fan. Yes, I can definitely find an EDH deck 3 years from now that this is something. This is great. So, but it's literally the thought that counts in that situation. Brian,
yes.
Did you get anything sweet for Valentine's Day?
Peanut butter cups. Not even the Reese's kind, you know. These are like the more gourmet peanut butter cups.
Ooh.
But this is the funny thing. You said you got a $5 limit, Sean. We're at the like $20 limit.
Well, that's what happens when your wife's a vice president.
Exactly. But my wife being the vice president didn't really matter on her end, because she was like, why did you get me this much stuff? And I said, well, we had the $20 limit. And she's like, oh, shit, I forgot. We did have the $20 limit. I'm like, yeah, it's okay, honey. It's fine. I love my peanut butter cups in my car. That was wonderful. And I did. I really did. No, my birthday being so close to it, she had gone out and gotten the mystery cash. Have you seen this? Includes 5 15-card booster packs from recent Magic the Gathering sets, but you really don't know what you're getting.
Oh, yeah.
You're getting Ixalan, Hour of Devastation, and Amaketa Kaladesh, and then a mystery booster. So it's kind of fun. So I did get that in the last 3 or 4 weeks, which was great. My mystery pack was a Battle for Zendikar, in which I got a foil Jorian Rune Diver, which was great. So, yeah, I was happy about that, because that's going to go right into my Tiny Leaders deck. Not that I'm ever going to play Tiny Leaders again. That's what it is.
Keeping it alive
here in the West Central Illinois.
If you have someone who knows who you are, and they went out of their way to make sure you were happy, make sure you let them know how much you appreciated that. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. Matt is thinking about counter plays. He might be better than all, Matt, but what do you have to trump?
Jace's defeat foils. Now, obviously, this is an uncommon from a very recent set. These foils you can still get under a buck, and I think that these are going to be, at least in the short term, played and played semi-heavily in the sideboards. Being able to counter-target blue spell, it goes a little bit further than the gate, and I think it's going to start to creep up in value. If Jace takes off at all, the foils are going to go up quite a bit as well. Jace's defeat foils.
That would be not only a great trade mana-wise, but dollars-wise as well.
Yes. Wow.
Jace's defeat, taking down the greatest of all time.
And Vorthos-wise, you forgot that too.
Yeah, well, that would be amazing too. This week's In the Elevator here on Tryhards. That brings us up to 3 minutes to brew.
I am been looking at this card quite a little bit lately. Going back to standard legal cards, Tilinelli's Summoner. A human shaman, one red, one other. Whenever Tilinelli's Summoner attacks, you may pay X and a red. If you do, create X 1/1 red elemental creature tokens that are tapped and attacking. Everyone loves putting tokens on the battlefield, myself included. At the beginning of the next end step, exile those tokens unless you have the City's Blessing. So, gentlemen, this is an interesting card because, as you know, the City's Blessing just kind of comes as a one-shot thing. You don't have to keep those permanents on the battlefield. So Tilinelli's Summoner is a card that could get you the City's Blessing and then keep all of those tokens around once you make them. Do you see this making any waves in standard or other formats? Or if you had this card to build around, what would you do with it? Hurley, I'm going to start with you. What do you think of Tilinelli's Summoner?
I look at this card and I really like it. But a 1/1 for 2 without haste or without some additional keyword, I don't think really does it in this current format. I think if the format changes a little bit, that could change. If there is a red token theme, I do like this quite a bit. I do think that if there's a way to pump with your tokens, then yeah, let's go for it 10 out of 10 times. So if there's maybe more elementals, if there's a way to pump your elementals or a way to pump your team, because currently the only pump full pump spell we have or full pump enchantment is the, I think it's Radiant Blessing, but you have to name a creature type. I don't think you're going to name elemental unless there's some elementals that pop up, or the alternative there is maybe we get a Young Pyromancer reprint within Dominaria. I mean, I'm not sure it'd be overpowered, but hey, yeah, you know, if we got that, that might be the card that pushes Tilinelli's Summoner over the edge.
Sean, what do you think? Tilinelli's Summoner, you think this has any legs?
I think I would like it more if, with the City's Blessing, it had haste. I think Matt is on top of something right there. I think that this also reminds me of the fact that I don't like the way that Wizards has decided to do the City's Blessing. Because it's non-interactive. Again, how hard is it to count to 10 to figure out if you have the City's Blessing or not? All right, I'll leave that lay for a moment. But I do like this in control-ish decks that can bring it out of the sideboard so you don't play any threats main. In my Spanish Inquisition deck, red, black, white, I am struggling with playing threats in the main. I think if there were better control answers, I could just bring the threats out of the sideboard. And then after my opponent sideboards out their removal, Tilinelli's Summoner is just a runaway win for free. But red, black, and white don't have that power right now. Can you find a situation in which this goes unanswered for a turn cycle? If the answer is yes, I love it. If the answer is no, then I think it's not worth its cost.
What about in kind of like a red God Pharaoh gift deck, where essentially it does have haste, it becomes a 4/4, and it comes from the graveyard for free, and then you get to keep all the tokens?
Well, you're the God Pharaoh's gift expert, so just ask yourself.
I actually think that might be something there. I mean, you kind of got the juices flowing a little bit there.
That's, hey, when Hurley gets the juices flowing, you too. We got to stop that. I actually like this card a lot, A, because it generates tokens. I think the biggest drawback to it, I'm not as down on it as you all are with not having haste or flying or something. I think that would be a little silly. The fact that you have to attack with it to get the tokens, and I think that's the biggest drawback. If you can attack with it, make some tokens with the City's Blessing and keep them around, and then somehow keep attacking in with it, creating those tokens turn after turn, this seems like it's going to be, you know, just like Sean said, a runaway win in the right situation. So it might be a case of winning more. But we have to remember, there is a card out there that hasn't seen much play, the Locust God. The Locust God is great at generating tokens. And I just see this as another enabler for maybe trying to do that and, pun intended, swarm your opponent. You've already got favorable winds that can give those insect creatures an additional 1/1. So why not gum up the ground with something like Tilinelli Summoner? I think there's a place for this moving forward.
The poor people's version of Monastery Mentor. Tilinelli Summoner, this week's 3 Minutes to Brew here on Tryhards. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. Matt, you were at SCG Indy. What'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Got to watch a lot of Magic and got to watch a lot of people brewing with, you know, new Modern. But I'd have to say, I think the best thing I did to get better at Magic was play a super casual format called Wizard's Tower. I can explain it very quickly. Essentially, it's a cube. You draw 3 cards off the top of this cube. You have a cube deck, and then you have 7 cards face up. And during your upkeep, every turn, you draft one of those cards that are there's 7 cards that are face up, and you draw your normal card, and then you play from a shared graveyard and a shared library. Super casual. A local player she's kind of been bugging me for a while to play this, and we've just never had the time to do it. I gotta say, it was a blast. A lot of the cards were super underpowered. They did a bunch of testing on it, and they found that the super underpower cards were fun, but one of the most unique experiences I've had playing Magic in years. It was a ton of fun, and I guess I need to rebuild an actual EDH deck now so I can play super casual like I used to.
Sometimes the unexpected moments of learning are what gets you the most. I was on the road for the family visitation funeral this weekend, so I didn't get to play. But what that did give me the opportunity to do was listen to a lot of other casts. If you don't leave your comfort zone, you will never hear something or learn something that challenges you, and you won't grow in that way. And I'm not going to throw out cast names here, but my opportunity to listen to different things while I was on the road, I think helped me. And I've already made a couple of adjustments to decks because of conversation that I've heard and insights that were on those different casts. Did I take their words verbatim? No, not at all. But they sent me on different roads of thinking. Think differently, and you'll realize you'll get some rewards for it. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
First thing I did to get better at Magic was I felt a little bit of vindication. And Sean, you're a little bit a part of this.
1 white, 1 black, 1 colorless.
Correct.
Sorcery.
Correct. Oh, I get it. I was reading Jerry T's article on SCG, which was quite fascinating. He was kind of all over the place, but there's some decks that he highlighted, and one of them was a blue-green pummeler list. And I was thinking, huh, I remember myself trying to brew a blue-green pummeler list not too long ago, and I looked at the list, and it was so close to what I had with just a couple of different additions. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what that deck needs. That's exactly what that deck needs. And this one is Sage of Shalaya's Claim, which is an elf druid that gives you energy when it enters the battlefield. I'm like, well, yeah, duh. Now that we don't have, you know, some of the energy enablers like Attune, that's the card that we need. So I'm really hyped to get back on that blue-green pummeler list that is putting up some pretty good results on Magic Online. The other thing that I realized this weekend, and this is going to come as a shock to you two, an absolute shock. We're old. The reason I know that is as I was going through some of my collection, I'm having a kind of a fondness for the stamped pre-release foils because of the date. Mm-hmm. And it gives us a sense of when things were happening in Magic history and in our history of our lives, etc. So I had pulled out a foil stamped Soulfire Grandmaster that was from Fate Reforged. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, oh man, that's a great card, and the artwork on it with the foil is beautiful and everything. And then I realized, oh my god, this card is 3+ years old. And that just seems kind of shocking to me. To know, you know, to kind of live your life through the sets of Magic being released and just how much has happened since I remember opening that at that pre-release so many moons ago. Slow down, take the moments, enjoy it because it goes by fast.
Soulfire Grandmaster should say, if you're over 40 and you enter a tournament, all your spells have lifelink.
Amen.
If that sounds good to you, oh, you brave soul. Thanks for hanging out with us again on this week's episode of Tryhards.